everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is an X Tuesday episode. It's also a 12 Days of the Comic Source episode. And today I'll be talking about Extremist number 3. This is written by Leah Williams. We have art by Jorge Jante, inks by Roberto Poggi, and colors by Jim Charlampidis. So the Extremist, it's basically Department X, right? It's telling the story of Department X, which in the Age of X-Men world is basically the police force. So you've got Psylocke, Iceman, Northstar, Jubilee, and Moneta, and Blob is their leader, and they enforce the laws, which basically seems to be they go around and make sure that the most insidious threat of all, as it's called, love, doesn't happen, right? They arrest intimacy violators, and then Psylocke mind wipes them and makes them forget that they were attracted to this person or they're having intimate relations. She like removes those memories, and that's supposed to, I don't know, make things perfect. You know, I've talked extensively about what a stupid idea I think this is, how X-Man can be so foolish to think that he can basically reprogram a species to not do something that they're genetically predisposed to do. Like, genetically, for the survival of the species, you are physically attracted to people. You know, beyond the emotion part of it, like, you want to be physically intimate with people to propagate the species. It makes zero sense that he thinks he can fight against this, but he's trying to fight against it regardless. Anyway, in the last issue, we saw that Blob admitted that he has feelings for Betsy, for Psylocke. And when Betsy finds out, Blob is so, I don't know, I guess embarrassed that he calls in sick for like 3 days, and then Betsy eventually goes to his house to ask him about it. And it ends with her asking him, because she had offered to remove the feelings and to even implant a suggestion in Blob's mind that whenever he looks at Betsy, he feels slightly ill. So he won't be attracted to her anymore. He'll start associating her with the feelings of unease or what have you, nausea or whatever. And he says, no, he would rather keep his memories of her. And so she goes to talk to him, and he basically says that, you know, when you pine for somebody and long for somebody, basically, you know, yeah, it hurts a little bit knowing they're forbidden and you can't have it, but you get so used to that feeling that when it's not there, you would feel the absence of it. So I guess kind of that saying, better to have loved and lost and never to have loved at all. He would rather feel that longing than feel nothing at all. So that seems to affect Betsy a little bit. And she like climbs across the table at him and asks him, does it still hurt? And he swallows, he says, yes. And she says, okay, see you tomorrow, Freddie. And she leaves. Like, it's so weird. Like, she gets up on the table and crawls across him like she's some kind of minx. Like, I thought the way it made it seem was like she was going to be intimate with him, or like, it's so strange. He says, yes, it still hurts. And she just, okay, just hops off the table and leaves. And he's just kind of sitting there like with his jaw on the floor. Like, what? So anyway, the next day, Blob does go back to work. They're sitting there at Department X, and Blob's kind of looking over at Betsy, and she sees him looking at her and sort of smiles. So you get the feeling that, okay, things are going to be okay. Meanwhile, Iceman and Northstar bring in another person that apparently they caught being intimate, and he's saying, please, I'll never see her again. I promise, just don't make me forget her. Because obviously people know when you break one of the intimacy laws, they know the consequences. Like, yeah, we're going to take you in here and you're going to get mind wiped. So this guy's basically begging for the same thing that Blob wanted, right? He's like, I would rather have my memories of her and never see her again than have my memories removed. So please don't make me forget her. And Moneta, who is by far the most extreme of this group and a bigot and prejudice and just absolutely horrible human being, She says, oh, it's funny how they always say that. And, you know, they deny this guy's request. And so Betsy says, okay, you know, she's going to come over here and calm this guy down and remove his memories. So she tells him, you know, she puts her, she does her little thing, puts her hands on his head or whatever. And then she's done. And she says, there, that should feel it. Do you feel better now? And he's kind of shaking, doesn't really say anything. And Betsy says, okay, you know, let's give him some time to rest before I'll go back in for confirmation. That was quite a lengthy infraction to clean up, and I don't want to be any more invasive that I have to. So they're going to go put him in a comfy chair and check on him in a little while once he's had a chance to rest. So meanwhile, a little while later, Blob gets a phone call, and he basically is told about a party that's happening that night. And again, people hanging out, they're not supposed to be having these, you know, even friendships are forbidden. So, you know, these parties are frowned upon. They're not supposed to be gathering, especially not in private. So Fred says, okay, we'll get it cleaned up in a jiffy. Meanwhile, Jubilee's trying to talk to Blob. She's very concerned about what she learned last issue, about what Manette has been doing to Nezumi, who is a person that was breaking one of the intimacy laws. And they captured her, but they couldn't wipe her because she's pregnant. And so they can't get a hospital. They can't find a hospital to take her. So they're just keeping her there at their headquarters. But Manette has kind of taken it upon herself to be in charge of that situation. And she's just chaining her to a sink in the basement and treating her terribly because, again, she's super bigoted. She's super prejudiced, closed-minded, just, you know, a complete garbage person. And when she sees Nezumi, all she sees is a retrograde, or a grade, as she calls him, which is just, you know, like a subhuman person who can't control their urges and is trying to be intimate. That's just, for whatever reason, I mean, she's very young, and that's just how she sees anybody who breaks one of these laws. So you kind of wonder, like, where's her genetic predisposition for, you know, intimacy or connection? Apparently she doesn't have it. Maybe that's one of her mutant powers. So anyway, Jubilee wants to basically tell Blob about what's happening, but, you know, he just got off the phone, and he wants to consult with John Paul about this call that he just got with a group of kids are supposed to be throwing a party, and they should get there and make sure nothing goes wrong. And he wants to be sure that Betsy's up to speed. And he asked John Paul to tell Betsy, cause, you know, he's still a little nervous to be around her. And John Paul's like, nope, tell her yourself. So Blob sort of reluctantly goes into the kitchen, and she has just made some biscuits, and she's sitting in there with Iceman. And Blob's like, I didn't know you could cook, Betsy. She goes, oh, sorry. I actually absolutely cannot cook. I just all of a sudden remembered this recipe for sage biscuits. I must have accidentally picked it up from somebody's mind. So Blob's like, Betsy, you scoundrel. What if that was someone's prize winning recipe that you stole? She's like, uh-oh. He says, uh-oh, they found you. I'll destroy the evidence, because we all know Blob loves to eat. Then here comes Monetta, obviously being Monetta, and it's always some emergency, or I don't know, just she's not a character that I even can stand at this point. And she's yelling at Betsy in French, you have some nerve. And John Paul's like, what did you do? She's like, I don't know. I haven't done anything. And Blob's like, all right, calm down. Tell us what this is about. What are you talking about? And Monetta again starts to scream at her. I just went to confirm the grade we brought in earlier had no trace of a mind wipe, none. So here she goes again, thinking she knows better. She's the youngest member of the team, thinking she knows better, calling him a grade. You know, that's like using the N-word over and over. Like, it's not okay. You're supposed to be part of this society. It's supposed to be better than it was before, because everyone's a mutant. There's not supposed to be persecution and prejudice. And she works for Department X, which is supposed to keep the peace and supposed to uphold the laws. And she's the most bigoted and prejudiced of all. And she's, you know, continually calling these people that break the rules grades. And now she's accusing Betsy of not doing a mind wipe. And first of all, he's not even supposed to be tested yet. And Betsy says that. She's like, you did what? I told you we needed to let him rest. So Betsy asks Bobby if he'll go and check on him. She's worried that there could be some permanent damage. And Betsy's saying, look, we can't let you go in there messing around with their minds after a wipe. We've got to let their minds settle down. You know, it's a delicate process. And Moneta's like, oh, sure, sure. I'm certain that's it. It's not you stalling to find a way to get him out of here with his memories intact. Because Moneta's power, she like can stretch her fingers out and make them sort of intangible and go in and basically touch people, like literally phase her hand into their brain and see their memories and see that sort of thing. And so, you know, Betsy goes in and mind wipes, and then Moneta will go in later and make sure that there's, you know, no other memories that need to be removed. But again, just a hothead, just accusatory. Betsy did this thing, you know, it can't be an accident. It can't be, you know, I mean, Betsy herself said that it was a pretty extensive extraction, but they needed to let him rest before they could go in and make sure that everything was gone. Because as she said, they don't want to do any more damage than possible. But Moneta doesn't even see the people that have, you know, transgressed. She doesn't even see them as people or persons. You know, they're just grades to her. She just wants to like inflict, you know, whatever. She'd probably lobotomize them if she could. You know, she sees the world in black and white. And if anybody breaks the law, then they're garbage and they deserve to suffer, and, you know, on and on. And so Blob's heard enough from her and basically tells her to shut up, and then says, you know, these are severe accusations you're making. And did you even stop to consider that our guest may have an ability that allows him to get his memories back? And another accusation I forgot to mention, it that Moneta said, she accused Betsy of working with the resistance. And Blob's like, there is no resistance movement. And Moneta's like, you can't even make a decision about the prisoner in the basement. Why should I listen to you? And Jubilee says, guest, we need to call her guest. And Blob's like, the reason you should listen to me is because I'm the one who communicates what Department X does to the X-Men. You know, he's the one that's in charge. And Levy calls her little buddy. Like, why don't you take the rest of the day off? You need to clear your head before you say something hurtful that you might regret. So Moneta goes off in a huff. But she does, as she leaves, she does say, there is a resistance movement and I'll prove it to you. So Bobby comes back. He says, the guy seems okay. Maybe the mind wipe just didn't take. And, you know, none of them's really heard of that happening before. And Betsy says, I swear I didn't mean to leave his memories intact. And, you know, Blob's like, yeah, we know that you didn't do it on purpose. Everything's fine. But then Jubilee says, yeah, everything is not fine though. I hate to say it because Moneta was right about one thing. We got to figure out what to do about Nezumi. You know, none of the hospitals will take her. And it's what I was trying to talk to you about earlier, Fred. Have you seen the way she's been kept down there? And Blob's like, no, I, you know, he just assumed that Moneta was making sure she was comfortable. And Jubilee's like, no, she's in chains for one. And that really surprises Blob. He's like, what? Who would have put her? Well, who do you think? Moneta. You know, Northstar says, yeah, she runs down there to define her torture techniques every chance she gets. And yeah, why is this pregnant woman still in her basement in the first place? I say, yeah, because no hospital will take her. No hospital is going to take a pregnant patient. They don't have pregnancy in the X-Men world. You know, everybody's grown in a test tube, so no hospital is going to do it. And they don't want to send her to the prison already, because then they'll mind wipe her and they're going to remove any knowledge that she's pregnant. Then she comes to and, I'm pregnant. Like, that's not a way to deliver a baby when you don't even know you're going to. So it's kind of a mess. So they tell Blob, you need to figure out what to do with her sooner or later, because that's the thing about pregnancy. It's going to happen, you know, and whether you're ready for it or not, and that's going to be a crisis. So Blob's at home later and he's laying in bed thinking about what to do. And Betsy comes knocking and she said, you know, I just wanted to see if you're okay. And this is so interesting. So it's not necessarily that Betsy seems to be reciprocating any sort of romantic feelings for him. But, you know, just it seems like Betsy's happy for just the companionship. You know, she goes and puts a kettle on. We saw last issue that Blob really loves books. And Betsy says, hey, why don't you bring me some of your favorite books? So they kind of sit around and they talk about books. And Betsy says, you know what? I really think that you shouldn't be reading this stuff. You know, a lot of it evokes emotion, and they're not supposed to be reading about love or, you know, those kind of things. And you know, she tries to read some of it. It's kind of poetry and that sort of stuff. And she says, I don't even know how you can stomach this stuff. It makes me feel embarrassed that we ever carried all these things inside us, right? Like these romantic feelings or whatever. And she says, I remember this one memory, and I know it had to be real because it can still make me cry. And Blob's like, Betsy, you know, you don't need to. She's like, no, it's fine. Again, because it affects me so deeply, I know this memory is mine. I know these feelings are mine. And so she talks about how she had a classmate who had talked about reaching a turning point where this classmate finally felt good about her body. And Betsy had long struggled with her body image. And seeing that happen to her classmate, knowing her classmate eventually just from one day to the next, the switch kind of flipped and she finally felt beautiful. Betsy was looking forward to that. And she was hoping that was going to happen for her at some point because she'd never felt good about her body, even to the point where she developed an eating disorder. And she says, yeah, I always had a deficit of self-love. And, you know, so I had so much vitriol about my own body. And now there's just a calm space in my head where all that self-hatred used to be, all, you know, all those feelings of self-love that had become corrupted. And anyway, she's like, my point is there are things about the old ways that I find confusing. And I can only seem to remember hurting all the time. And now I don't have that. And Blob says, well, I know hearing it's not going to make any difference when it comes to you, you know, fighting against your own demons. But, you know, for the record, you know, I think you're beautiful and I'd sell out every member of the team. Heck, Betsy, it seems downright criminal that you can't even see how lovely you are. Faces like yours are what started ancient Greek wars, you know, and she gets a real kick out of that. She laughs and says, that's about the worst thing that I've ever heard. And Betsy's thinking about it. And she says, you know, would it really be that easy for you to leave Department X behind for me, Fred? And he says, well, you know, yeah, you're my heart. You know, you're what I've always wanted. So again, that seems to touch Betsy, but she doesn't necessarily reciprocate. So not sure where this is going. I thought it was going one direction based on how it ended last issue, but now I wonder. But she definitely seems happy for the companionship. So anyway, a couple days later, the night of the supposed party, Department X shows up at the house, and it's supposed to be this raging party, a real doozy, and there's like nobody even inside. And it turns out it's a library, which, you know, that gets to Blob because, again, his love of books. And they're like, well, where are all these people? It's just supposed to be this huge gathering and a huge party. And they go into one of the back rooms and they do find some people there. There's about, 10, 11 of them. And when the members of Department X see them, they're kind of taken aback because they're just kind of sitting around a fire talking. It's not some kind of raging party. There's not unveil going on. It doesn't really look like there's any, you know, intimacy laws being broken. And they're like, well, supposedly it was a doozy of a party, right? And North Star says, yeah, whoever called in the tip insisted that we'd be here at this time. So the question is, who phoned in the tip? And Moneta fesses up. She says, I did. None of you would believe me. So voila, I brought you to the resistance. Look. And she goes over there and she grabs someone by the shoulder again, calling people retrogrades. These are all members of this dangerous retrograde cult. And one of the guys says, it's the extremists, Graham. And that takes Blob by surprise. Like, what? Wait, what did they just call us? Extremists? I mean, that's not how they see themselves. They see themselves as helping to keep the peace, helping keep people, you know, along the straight and narrow. So a couple of the people want to fight. A couple of them want to run. I mean, none of them are trained at all. And so, you know, they're kind of overmatched to the point where when they do attack, Department X is taken by surprise, but they do subdue them pretty easily as these people are, you know, chanting out in Saba Nur platitudes, I guess you'd say. We believe community is not conflict. We believe no love is not war. We believe mutant is not God. So it doesn't take too long before they're all subdued. And Iceman asks, well, Betsy, do you want to, she's like, what? Well, do you want to, you know, destroy the evidence, erase their memories of us? So they won't even remember this party. They won't remember that, you know, this happened. And Northstar says, resistance or not, they weren't breaking any laws. Moneta, what have you done? And she goes, I did what I had to do. What, by bringing us into a trap, by setting us up? And Moneta has a big smile on her face and she says, no, I proved the resistance exists. And Blob's not having it. He's like, you proved? The only thing you proved is we're a bunch of assholes. They were afraid of us. You instigated the fight with unarmed mutants and they weren't even breaking any rules. You put everybody in this room in danger, all because you're petty enough to prove a point that way. And Moneta's, again, making excuses. It's never her fault. Everybody's wrong and she's right and she knows better than everybody. Well, you wouldn't listen to me. I was just doing my job. And I Blob has absolutely had it. He says, what job? You don't work with us. So now she's sorry. Now we see the look on her face like, oh no, I crossed the line. It's like, you can't do that to me. And Blob says, I'm the only one that can, little buddy. I did, and you're done. You are done. And he says, we'll have an independent contractor take care of your exit interview, so there's no conflict of interest. You won't even remember there was a resistance. So it sounds like she's going to have her mind wiped, which, I mean, thank God, just get rid of her. She's so awful. She's such a horrible, horrible person. And Blob's finally found enough and I don't know, or had enough. Maybe he's, he's waking up to the fact through his feelings for Betsy that this is not the way the world is supposed to be. I still find it interesting though, that of all people, they're choosing Blob to tell this story. I mean, before the age of X-Man, he seems to me, he was much more a Moneta than a Betsy, you know, he was much more petty and self-serving, self-centered. So it's interesting that Leo Williams is, you know, choosing him. Granted, like I said, the only two guys on the team are both gay, which great, but I guess that only leaves Blob to use in this situation to have feelings for Betsy. But yeah, it's definitely an interesting choice. So based on the cover, which I talked about last episode, I thought maybe that they were gonna get together, because on the cover you see silhouettes of Betsy and Blob, and it's kind of like a sunset in the background, and Betsy and Blob are holding hands, and it definitely seems kind of like a romantic cover, but not yet. We haven't gotten there yet, but it definitely feels like we're going to. This feels like a tipping point, because for all the following the rules and doing what they're supposed to, wiping the memories of people that have broken the intimacy laws, nobody's ever really seemed eager to do it, with the exception of Moneta, right? Nobody else is all gung-ho and aggressive about it. They do it almost reluctantly, and they give off this vibe of, we're doing it for your own good. You know, the people that break the laws, we're like, we're trying to protect you from yourself so you don't end up in prison, basically. You know, so we'll get you. We'll bring you in, we'll wipe your memory, and then you can go live your life without breaking any laws. And you know, it's more about protecting people for everybody except for Moneta. So if Blob just saw these members that obviously follow N. Sabiner, they are members of the resistance in that way, if he sees the harm that they're receiving harm because of what Department X is doing, and even says, you know, he's very surprised by some of their words, like they were afraid of us, they called us extremists. Like Blob's definitely a candidate to have a change of heart. I mean, we see how empathetic he is, and obviously he, you know, he does have a heart. He's in love with Betsy Braddock, so, and he's the leader of Department X. So we could definitely see some ramifications. And now they don't have Moneta in their ranks to kind of push them to be more radicalized, you know, to kind of call them out on stuff and be aggressive about taking care of these retrogrades, as she calls them. So yeah, the first issue of Extremis was okay. I thought the second issue, the story really leveled up. And then this issue, I really enjoyed it. Like we're starting, because at first it just felt like, man, I'm reading a story about people that are fascist. You know, it's just a story about this fascist regime that is Department of X. But now we're getting faces, we're getting feelings, we're getting stories about the actual characters. You know, we're hearing a lot about Betsy. We're hearing a lot about Blob, and we're hearing about their relationship, like the way they interact with each other. And they're seeming much more human rather than that first issue where they just seemed like, okay, we're just out doing our job. And, you know, we don't care that it's fascist and that, you know, that's just too bad because we're upholding the law. We're upholding the rule of law. That's not an interesting story. Much more interesting story is the fact that, you know, members of Department X itself can't seem to resist the genetic predisposition toward community and connection and intimacy. So great job by Leah Williams. The art by George Jante is very solid as well. I know I talked last time about some funky facial expressions. That does happen from time to time. But I think overall, I do like his art, especially close-ups. When he does close-ups on faces, it's really good. And his facial expressions are pretty solid as well. So anyway, that's going to do it for this episode. Hope you guys all enjoyed it. I hope everyone has a happy holiday, a Merry Christmas, a Happy Hanukkah, a Happy New Year. Hope you're all being safe and everybody is healthy coming out of this holiday on the other side. And we look forward to better days in 2021. So there's tons of content, tons of 12 Days of the Comic Source episodes for you to all listen to. Hope you're all enjoying them. And we'll keep doing what we're doing, loving comics and, you know, keeping each other safe. And we'll be out of this before we know it. So, again, thanks everybody for listening, and I'll talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.